Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ravelry Radio, for every rivalry matters, but none more than one. And that rivalry between Michigan and Michigan State. So obviously we'll talk about both schools today, and we'll break down a little bit of Notre Dame and college football all on this 45-minute show. Can't wait to get started with Tyler Hayward as we wait for him to call in on line one. First thoughts early in the show, I'll say that everything is right in front of Michigan. One game away, Ohio State, you got what you wanted. You got to win that game. It's a rivalry game. Jim Harbaugh has to finally get over that last stage. The biggest hurdle is right in front of you. You win and you're in. I know Northwestern would be the next opponent, but to be honest, this is everything. You know, not only is it the biggest game, obviously, on the schedule, but it's the biggest game Jim Harbaugh has had as a Michigan football coach. No game has been bigger, not even close. You can argue 2016, but really, for them to be that good in his second year, I think that as far as Michigan fans being okay with even the loss to Ohio State, I know that's tough. You're never okay to lose to Ohio State, but him being that good in year two, the loss wouldn't be as detrimental as this one would be. This is his fourth year. They're really good. They're in the top four. They've been better than Ohio State all year, and now they just have to win. And you know, it's a tough one because, you know, I'm not going to do an early prediction, obviously, yet. We got Tyler on the horn, and, you know, Tyler, we'll talk Michigan now, and then we'll get into state, obviously, and then we'll get into some basketball, but I do want to get into football first. Obviously, Michigan didn't look great yesterday. I think Indiana played pretty well, but Indiana's always kind of been this way. First thoughts, Michigan game. And what you've seen in the Indiana game?
Well, ultimately, we're not going to talk about Michigan OSU yet, and that's going to eat up a lot of time for one of our shows later this week. But this Indiana team is, I mean, more or less a poor man's version of Ohio State. You have a quarterback who is capable of running, sits in the pocket a lot. Skill position players for Indiana are phenomenal. Spread type offense, the type of stuff that it doesn't give Michigan headaches in regards that they're going to sit there and they'll give up over 30 a game or anything like that against spread teams. But it does cause a headache, and so you keep the ball out of the offense's hands, which, even though Michigan's offense, and we've kind of banged on them a little bit this season, it's not the most prolific offense in the world. They need the ball in their hands because of how their offense operates. You sit there, you wear down the front seven of the other team with Caron Higdon, who's second in the Big Ten in rushing, and you just eat away at the clock at the end. You get that touchdown that pushes games out of reach, and so that's the type. So that's what Ohio State ultimately does in regard to how they run their offense. They tend to do the same things that Indiana does: very screen heavy, give it to your skill position players, good running game out of the spread set, and so there's a lot of similarities, and it's a lot to look forward to. Something to look at as we get ready for the showdown to decide the Big Ten East. But I think Michigan still handled themselves well. They could have let things kind of spiral out of control going into halftime, missing on that opportunity so close to the goal line. So I think that it showed that, look, they can handle a little bit of pressure. They've not really faced much this season. And so I think that needed to happen before they played Ohio State.
Yeah, I think that it probably was the best scenario as far as having a little bit of a challenge and playing a team, like you said, that's very similar in some regards as far as how they play on offense. and there was some holes there where the quarterback got loose a few times. And I know that Urban Meyer had mentioned that they needed Dwayne Haskins to run more. So, you know, I think you'll look to see more design runs or quarterback draws where, to be quite honest, Indiana looked really good at that. You know, when they went five wide, Peyton Ramsey had a lot of room to run. And it's happened a few games this year, but Michigan obviously hasn't had a lot of adversity where, besides Northwestern, when it looked bad early, this was another game that kind of went like, okay, this is a tough one. You know, Indiana's playing well. I mean, everything's kind of in their control. Obviously, you can go back a little bit to the Michigan State game as well, where the turnover in their own territory, when the state ties it up, that's a little adversity. But like you said, you're absolutely right. They haven't had a whole lot of adversity. I mean, Notre Dame just in week one, that's so long ago now. Since then, I mean, you really didn't come down to to an end-of-the-game situation. I know Northwestern was somewhat close to that with, you know, 6 minutes they had to score a go-ahead touchdown, but that's different. I mean, this could be a game where it comes down to the last possession, where Michigan needs to find a way to score. You know, I wrote on our page earlier, Tyler, I really believe this, and I'll let you answer this question. First, my thought is they got to score 30 points. And my question to you is, do you agree that they have to find a way to score over 30 points?
Are you talking this? You're talking this upcoming weekend?
Yeah, this against Ohio State. Yeah. I truly believe they got to get 30 or more.
No. You got to get high 20s. I think that Ohio State's offense, as prolific as it is, you know, Michigan's defense is just as good, and so there is going to be some balancing out in that aspect. I don't think you need to score in the 30s to beat this Ohio State team. You go back and you can watch the Michigan State game, because let's just use it in the comparison that, look, Michigan State's defense is almost as good as Michigan's in regards that, you know, you could probably drop a David Dowell from
Metellus
and Metellus and have it be just the same. And so it's as close as you're going to get to the real deal. And ultimately, Ohio State's offense didn't look that good. You think about between turnovers and, you know, taking the safety and things like that. You know, Michigan State gave you 9 of those points. Their offense gave OSU 9 of those points.
Absolutely, yep.
And so Ohio State's offense did not look that good. Michigan State swarms to the ball, I think, better than Michigan. But they were right there the whole time, and Ohio State's offense, you know, they did kind of what Indiana did last night against Michigan. They picked up a couple first downs, but they didn't do anything that was really, oh, my God. Anything that was really impressive. If Antonio doesn't call a timeout late in the game hoping to, you know, get a strip and a fumble, just because Michigan State tends to fight to the end of each and every game, you know, Ohio State probably doesn't run that last one in on the goal line either. So there's more points that Ohio State probably should have had against MSU. And so I think that Michigan's defense is good enough to stop OSU. Maybe not stop them, but slow them down. I think that there's certain things that OSU's holding on to that we didn't see against Michigan State. There's certain things that we'll see Ohio State do that we haven't seen them do all season, as is usually the case, you know, when Michigan and Michigan State play each other, when State and Ohio State play each other, when Michigan and Ohio State play each other. Like, we'll see a couple things that we haven't seen all year. And so one of those might break loose, but overall, I think Michigan's defense can handle OSU's offense. And so I don't think 30 is a killer number for Michigan to get. I think you got to get high 20s, and you know what, the more I keep talking about it, you could probably go low 20s and win this game.
I think it's just because it's at Ohio State. I think you're definitely pretty accurate, or almost 100% accurate. I just think the difference is them being at home. I think with a good crowd, and I think they're going to stop Michigan a few drives, and they're going to get better field position. Their punter obviously has been outstanding at pinning people deep. And I just think that they're gonna, the defense is going to be really upset with the way they play it. So I think they'll do a little better job. But I will say this, that defense has a lot of holes in Ohio State. I mean, that last play, Tyler, I mean, the Maryland quarterback has just got to be still just so sick about what happened in that two-point conversion. The secondary in Ohio State is atrocious sometimes. I mean, they really have a hard time understanding who to cover. I mean, in that last play, two guys basically cover one, and the Maryland kid is wide open. And as I'm watching it, I'm going, you know, I'm trying to go back and forth with Michigan State, Nebraska, and watch this, and I'm just shocked that Maryland was so easily gashing Ohio State. The secondary, a lot of problems. And I really just think Michigan has to find a way to get some big plays through the air, kind of like Maryland did. I mean, it was just at will. Maryland just picked them apart. And, Michigan State shut them right down. And
that's the thing. It wasn't even just the secondary, though.
I do think Ohio State will score more points. And when I say 30, I don't know if Ohio State will score 30, but I think Michigan may need to score 30 to win. But you never know. I mean, look, a lot of things can happen. If Michigan plays their best defensive game, you're absolutely right. I do think some of the struggles Michigan has from the spread, when they cover so tightly, I just think it's one of those games, and this is the final question I have about Michigan, we'll get ready to state. Do you think this is one game where Don Brown has said, you know what, we're going to be aggressive and do who we are, but we might need to come back a little bit because we can't give up deep passes all game?
I mean, like I said, this is something where it was the perfect scenario. You know, it wasn't close enough to where, you know, Michigan's shot at the playoff was in jeopardy. Winning the Big Ten this season, I don't think is without Ohio State being as elite as they have been, I don't think it means as much. But and so I think it could have cost them a shot at the playoffs with a loss this late in the season. You know, if you had a couple losses early on and then you ended up winning out and winning the Big Ten, probably. So it wasn't close enough to jeopardize that. But there's enough to correct before this weekend. It can bring them down a peg. Can get them refocused. I'm not saying, oh, they're boastful, arrogant, whatever. Can let them focus a little bit more on what they still need to do to improve, because until the season's over, you can always improve on something. And I think that's something that maybe they can realize now with this game, but it wasn't enough to put their postseason hopes in jeopardy.
Yeah. Also, something to look at is possibly what's happening over in the week. Chase Winovich probably out. I know some new reports are saying it's a broken collarbone. I know me and you had talked about it earlier yesterday. I thought that's what it was, like the way it looked and the way he was landed on. So I'm not sure. I can't. That's only to speculate. Jim Harbaugh kind of said all the right things to get people at bay. But let's be quite honest. I mean, he really was down for a while, and it didn't look good. And I don't expect him to play this weekend. So if the reports are true, Chase Winovich will not be playing, and he's out with a broken collarbone. So we'll find out. I mean, we'll know a lot this weekend.
Broken collarbone tour 2018.
Obviously, going to Michigan State, obviously, Tyler, the title is Know Who You Are, and I still think Michigan State, I wrote earlier on the postgame thread that I thought that this is not a loss that changes the program for Michigan State. I think they're going to be really good next year. They got a lot coming back. Obviously, this game hurts the loss, but I just think Nebraska came out. It was their biggest game of the year. They feel good about themselves. They thought that they played it like a championship game, where they thought Michigan State kind of played it as, we're going to just give Rocky a chance. And I will even say this before I get your thoughts. I think you're kind of onto something with the Lombardi thing. I know that I've been high on him, but I do think that he is new, and there's going to be times when he struggles, and there was drop balls. And I do think that, I hate to say it, because I obviously have my thoughts on Dave Warner, I don't think play calling was the problem. I do think you're right. The more I look at the game, watching the game today, I think it wasn't play calling. So I think people need to realize that. Give me your first thoughts. I know you mentioned it earlier yesterday that it wasn't on the play calling. The big issue on offense, though, what is it?
Well, look, just because it wasn't on the play calling yesterday doesn't mean it hasn't been for four seasons. That's the first thing. And I took a lot of grief for saying that this one was not on Dave Warner, because it's so easy when he has become, you know, the bullseye for Michigan State fans after a loss, especially after losses that you shouldn't have. You know, you can maybe look at the Michigan game a little bit. You know, Ohio State is another one. And you have those types, you have games like that, Northwestern, and you're just like, you know, Dave Warner sucks. He's got to go. And I've been saying since 2015, Connor Cook was bailing him out that year. So even with his bum shoulder. And so I took a lot of grief for saying yesterday wasn't on Dave Warner. That doesn't mean I don't think he should be fired. He needs to go. That's the first thing I want to clear. But,
yeah.
You know, Rocky missed a lot of things early. He had open receivers. He had Justin Lane open once. You know, he had Matt Dotson open, you know, quite a few times. You know, there were other plays where, in, I think, closer to the end of the game, he threw to Matt Sokol, who was in triple coverage. Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
If you have a tight end who can't catch in triple coverage, you have at least four guys rushing. It's one-on-ones everywhere else. Cody White was in the game. Daryl Stewart was in the game. Look that way.
Right.
I mean, take advantage of those. It's one-on-one. It might be tough because, you know, Nebraska secondary played really well yesterday. But I'll give it to those guys any time of the day, because when you look at that game, or when you look at the season, like coming into the season, Dalton Davis, Cody White, Daryl Stewart, that was supposed to be the best receiving group in the Big Ten. So
yeah,
I think that I would have given them opportunities. You know, so he missed a couple reads. There were seven drops. That didn't help. You know, he's going to be a good player. We've seen how good he can potentially be against Purdue. He wasn't, you know, 300 yards, 318 yards, whatever it was against Purdue. You know, some of those came on the jet sweep to Naylor at the end of the game, who, again, was not available. So, those types of running plays get added to those stats. So he had a solid game. It wasn't overwhelming against Purdue. Yesterday, we saw him come back down to earth. He had issues reading the defense, where the late pressures were coming from. He wasn't ready. He's going to be great. He's got the arm talent for it. You could hear yesterday in his postgame interview some of the leadership that he had coming out of that. And I think one of the best things was, and I was just, you know, this was incredible to hear it, is they, how hard is it, you know, when you're hitting these, you know, you had the drops that you had. And like I said, there were about seven of them. He sat there and he goes, I didn't see any drops. It's on him. You know, he's got to throw that ball a little bit better. Some of the catches that were made, if you want to look at it like, oh, well, State would have caught that ball. Well, some of those catches that were made were pretty incredible catches because they were a step behind.
The weather was
the
bad.
Wind,
it, I think that's a little, I mean.
Yeah, the wind looked awful when Martinez was throwing the ball, but Rocky, you know, I've talked about it, his arm strength is second to none, and so I don't think it bothered him in regard to getting the ball there quick with velocity, but it may have thrown it off an inch or two one way or the other. And I think, you know, when he talked about a couple balls sailing on him, I don't know if that's the case, because he overthrew a lot of open guys, you know, 25 yards downfield. He overthrew them a little bit against Purdue as well. So he's
sure
going to be good. He's going to be a great leader. You know, Michigan State's got their quarterback situation straightened out for at least three seasons in regards that they'll at least have somebody talented there. He just needs a little bit more time, and that's what I've been saying. I still think Lewerke's the guy when he's healthy. I think seeing some of these things in practice, I think this is maybe why Lewerke's sitting in there saying, look, I think it gives my team the best chance to win with a bum shoulder. And it's because he sees some of these just little things that Rocky needs to improve on. And so I think that that's part of it is, you know, between the drops, between him not being able to read where the pressures were coming from, making the right checks at the line, not doing those types of things, I think it really handicapped Michigan State. I think it this is going to be awful to say. It's going to be weird to say. I think it handicapped Dave Warner, if that's even possible. So,
yeah.
It was a different situation yesterday. I'm not saying, you know, Warner doesn't deserve some of the blame. It's easy to peg him for everything that has happened to Michigan State over the last few years, including the 10-win season. It probably could have been more if we had someone else calling the plays. I think we had a friend of the show, actually, or one of our couple podcasts that we have done. We had Anthony Iani. He brought up a really good point. Utah State's offensive coordinator is doing a pretty solid job right there.
Yeah.
I think that would be an opportunity that, you know, maybe Michigan State has to look at. You know, that's the only Michigan State was their only loss this season. They're winning by about 30 points a game. I think that that would be a great fit if you would use a running quarterback the same way. You'd have more talented receivers in East Lansing. I think it would be an opportunity for him to move up, career change. I think that would be an incredible fit. That's something that we're not going to address until the end of the season because we know D'Antonio is not going to touch any Dave Warner issues with the 10-foot pole, at least until then. So,
right.
But all things considered, this one was not on Warner. This one's on Rocky. This one was on his misread, not knowing where the pressure's coming from. A couple of dropped balls, especially from Dotson, who has been the most consistent tight end. He just had a bad game. And so I think that there's some opportunity for growth all around, but, you know, you can't peg this one on Warner.
I think there's two things that come to mind as far as the reason for the loss. Number one, it's Nebraska, you know, played really well on defense. And number two, I think you're kind of spot on as far as some misreads and some mistakes there. And there was drop balls. There's one in the end zone that should have been caught, and that wins the game. So there's a few plays there here and there that probably wins the game for Michigan State. It's certainly not on the defense. We know that. We don't even have to touch on that. We know how good that defense is. They're going to continue to be good. And look, you win your last game, they should. They're at home. And you go to a bowl game, you win that, and you move forward for next year. And who Michigan State is as a program is they've been very successful. But I do think that once the season's over, it's time to move on. It's time to get a different coordinator, get a couple fresh faces on the offensive side, spice things up a little bit. You got great skilled players. You got a lot of guys coming back. The running game will be good. LJ Scott's back, but you also have guys who've played already instead of him. Obviously, and Connor Hayward, who's been very good. And, you know, Jefferson's been really good as well at spots. So and they're going to be good on offense, I think, if they do make that move finally, because I think it's time. And I think it's just time because of how competitive that East Division is. When you're going to play against Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, you've got to find a way to get a little more dynamic on offense. I would argue that that's been the difference for Michigan, being able to – you know, they run the ball and they control the line of scrimmage. And I think the biggest thing is offensive line coach is better this year. The route running is better. You get two new coaches. They're teaching it better, but I think it is players. Shea Patterson makes a huge difference. He can obviously run. And I think that Patterson's ability to tuck it in and run has been huge because it just opens up things so much more. And Michigan State has that threat, whether it's Lewerke or Rocky. They both can run. There's got to be times there's design plays for him, whether it's Lewerke or Rocky, to run the football. And they're going to do it next year. I see it coming. But I just think, look, it's not on day one of this game, but like you said, it's been on him a few times, a few too many times, to be quite frank. So you move on.
Well,
you've got to make the tough decisions for them. You know, if you're Mark D'Antonio, it's not going to be easy, but you got to. You got to move forward. And
let me just say a couple things here. Really quick,
yeah,
you know, Rocky had opportunities to run as well yesterday when the play broke down, but he didn't do it unless it was designed. And so I think that's part of him being so new as well. I mean, yeah, he did play last. He was redshirted last season, but, you know, this was only, what, his third, fourth game he's seen action in. And it was a true road game. It was at probably the best home field advantage in the Big Ten. And so I think that it's a all of that did kind of play into it. But I can't, before we kind of change topics here, let me just put something in perspective. If I would have told you, you know, Michigan State's got an opportunity to go 8-5, no Michigan State fan is going to take that, you know.
Right.
At the beginning of the season, with all the hype, with the talent coming back and everything else, if I would have told you 8-5 at the beginning of the season, you know, that a lot of people would have thought that would have been lowball in Michigan State. And but if I would have told you the potential for 8-5 is still there after all the injuries, playing the sixth toughest schedule in college football, I'd take that in a heartbeat. And so it's all about perspective. And Michigan State has become accustomed to success under Mark D'Antonio. But ultimately, when you look at those two facts, and if I say, yeah, 8-5, well, Werke's got a bum shoulder, Rocky Lombardi's playing. At some point, you're using your seventh and eighth string wide receiver. You've used a different offensive line your first six games, a different combination up front. LJ Scott misses eight games. Josiah Scott misses eight games. Like, if I tell you that at the beginning of the year, you take that.
Definitely getting on the right track thinking that way, and I wouldn't argue it at all. I would say that this game, definitely the loss hurts, because I think more realistically, looking at what happened, you know, with the injuries, I say, okay, Michigan and Ohio State probably are two games that you may not win, whereas you got to beat Nebraska. You just do. And, you know, but I, like I said, with those, or like you're saying here, considering injuries and what has happened, the win against Purdue was a big win. So, you know, that kind of is replaced now with the loss of Nebraska. But at the same time, yeah, it's been a rough year with injuries. So you finish the year strong, you go 8-5, and yeah, it's definitely room for improvement. But at the same time, you're happy and you say, hey, let's get ready for next year, let's move on. And let's do it. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to move on, because I know basketball, you're ready for it, which rightfully so. And I'm excited, too, because I think this basketball season actually could be a lot of fun. And I'm going to say this to start first, that I'm not going to go over the top with Michigan yet, because obviously Villanova lost to Furman. So I got to pump the brakes a little bit for my excitement for Michigan basketball. But watching them play they are just so much tougher on defense than they've been in prior years. Obviously, we've seen it last year, but this year, they are really defending at a high level. Obviously, John Teske inside, he's huge. He blocks shots. Charles Matthews can block shots. I mean, I think they had, gosh, it seemed like they had 8 to 10 blocks against Nova, who's an athletic team. Let's talk about Michigan before we get into State, because they do play today. I think Michigan and Michigan State are the two best teams in the Big Ten. And I didn't think that until I watched Michigan play. I just think,
yeah,
talent-wise and the way Michigan runs their program, they have a really good shot again. And talk about them briefly on first thoughts, because it's a long year. I mean, we can't get over the top of anyone, negative or positive. But your first thoughts on Michigan, are you surprised at all by the way they handle Nova, or is maybe Nova just kind of bad?
I think it was a little bit of both. I was surprised they won by almost 30. But ultimately, look, Michigan is, I mean, in my mind right now, the second best team in the Big Ten. I'm not saying that there's any great teams in the Big Ten right now. I think that there's some really, really good ones. And I think that we're going to see, you know, maybe Indiana come through a little bit more. We're going to see those types of teams step up and maybe fill a void that we
Iowa looks really good
thought
too,
was,
mind you.
Yeah, that we thought was there. And so I think that I don't think there's any great teams in the Big Ten, but I think Michigan's the second best. The win against Villanova, I mean, look, the thing is you beat a team that had enough there for people to think that this could be a really good Villanova basketball team. Problem is, they are replacing 80% of their offensive production. But I think you hit the nail on the head. Michigan offensively has lost quite a bit from how they used to be. They used to be run and gun, you know. Yeah, they'll score 80 points a game, but they'll give up 79, those types of things. And I think that, you know, Beilein is recognizing that he doesn't have that talent. There was that swing year, and I think that may have come last year. They locked down on defense. He's gotten a lot better defensive play out of his guys than he's gotten anywhere else ever. And I think this year they've got to, you know, step it up again. And I think they're doing it. You know, I mean, yeah, Villanova's replacing 80% of their scoring, but you held them under 50, the defending national champs under 50. They still had the guys there for people to think it's a top 10 team. They were sixth. They might drop out. They're probably going to drop out of the top 25 altogether when the new poll comes out, because of the loss to Furman and how ugly it looks against Michigan. But Michigan's a good team still. They're a really good team. And believe it or not, when it comes to John Beilein, it starts on defense this year.
Yeah. It really does. It's surprising. And when you watch them, Tyler, they actually drive the basketball more than they have in the past, too. They want to get to the paint. And that was what was surprising to me watching the game against Villanova. Villanova is very athletic, and they had bigs, but Michigan had their way, whether it was mid-range or in the paint. And there wasn't a ton of three-point play, which I thought was very different for John Beilein. And I can tell you that it's something that's been needed because, you know how I felt for so long about John Beilein. You know, I'd be the first to admit I thought he was soft. I thought the style of play was soft. And I just didn't think it was enough to do enough damage in the Big Ten or moving forward in the NCAA tournament. I always felt they would run against a team that out-rebounded them. Now they rebound better. They're not very deep. I'll be quite honest. I think that's going to be their problem still in the end. They don't have a lot of depth. But the guys that come in, you know, do a decent job. You know, Eli Brooks, backup point guard, you know, from Pennsylvania, does a really good job. He controls the game, can hit shots. You know, he's a guy off the bench that has to continue to play well. Obviously, Isaiah Livers, you know, a sophomore, does really well. He rebounds well. But as far as the starting line, I mean, Xavier Simpson looks outstanding. He's a good lockdown guy. I thought John Pesky, just such a different dynamic for Michigan to have a big guy like that. I mean, I know I mentioned the comparison to Haas to you earlier in the week. He just controls the paint. He's big. Matthews is a long defender. I think Jordan Poole still needs to get a little better as a defender. But they're a solid team, and it's a team you're going to have trouble with if you don't play well. But, you know, obviously still Michigan State, in my opinion, the most talented and the best team in the Big Ten. And let's talk about them because they've got some big games, obviously, coming up. You know, Tennessee Tech isn't going to be a wild game. Like, Thanksgiving will be, I think, UCLA. That's going to be a big one. Talk about State, though, because one thing I'm noticing is they're scoring the ball a lot. They are really scoring at a high level. Talk about that, and maybe whereas Michigan's style has changed, even State has changed a little bit.
Yeah, it's been really odd. This year, I think things are kind of going back to normal a little bit. You know, Tom Izzo always liked to work the post game. I mean, he's always had a dominant point guard. You know, you look at the guys, obviously dating back, you can go to, you know, Mateen Cleaves, but he's always had like that Drew Neitzel who could take over a game. He's always had a really, really good point guard.
Kalen Lucas.
But I'm sorry?
Kalen Lucas, too. I mean, yeah, you're right on with that point guard. They had great play there.
Yeah, yeah. They've always had really good point guard play. But they've always worked inside out, whether it be cutting and slashing and those types of things. They've always gotten the ball on the inside. And this year it's a straight post-up. You know, Nick Ward is obviously going to be the focal point. Can't really stop him one-on-one. And then it turns into ball movement that you know, last year you didn't see a lot of. You had a guy like Miles Bridges. You knew the ball was going to end up going there eventually, and it kind of stopped there a little bit. And throw that in with his defense, you know, you could probably argue that he may have hurt the team a little bit in certain aspects, yeah, having him around. But when you have a when you have a guy like Ward, he demands a lot of attention. So, and he, for as big as he is, I mean, yeah, he lost 30, 40 pounds, whatever it is. For as big as he is still, you know, he runs the floor as well as anybody. And that's something that Michigan State likes to do, and they like to dominate from the paint. And but they have shooters all around now, too. Foster Lawyer, backup point guard, he can shoot if you let him. You know, Cassius Winston, you know, led the he shot over 50% in Big Ten play from the three-point line last year. You know, Langford, he can shoot. You know, McQuaid, hit or miss, he can shoot. He just isn't consistent, yep, all the time. Kenny Goins all of a sudden developed a three-point shot over the summer. Even Marcus Bingham, he's got a three-point shot. Gabe Brown, he can shoot the three. And it's a lot of younger kids. They're not great on defense. They all have terrific skill, though, yeah, offensively. And so they are, I think, focused that way. I mean, if you ask Izzo, he's still going to be pissed off, and he's still going to complain about his lack of defense.
Of course, yeah.
But ultimately, this is a team that, look, Cassius Winston is not a great defender still. I think your three best defenders are Matt McQuaid, Xavier Tillman, and Nick Ward. And so there are struggles in regards to stopping the penetration. And,
yes,
you know, Langford's very on and off defensively. And McQuaid, even though he's a great defender, he's not quick. And so there are some quicker guys that he has trouble with. And, you know, he does play point a little bit. Foster Lawyer, you know, way too small to handle a lot of people in college basketball,
yeah,
right now. So there are going to be struggles defensively. And so I think knowing that they can score is big. They're still going to try on defense. They're still going to hustle. They're still going to die for every loose ball. It still has that Tom Izzo mentality of stopping people. But offensively speaking, other than last season, you know, this is as talented of a group as Tom Izzo's ever had, top to bottom.
I truly think Michigan plays completely different. And I think Michigan State, in a way, is different this year because they do score the ball much better, but they do have a hard time containing people. And whereas Michigan just shockingly does a great job of controlling the ball. They don't give up a lot of straight line drives, where I think Michigan State struggles a bit. I mean, obviously, anyone's going to struggle against Kansas. I mean, you're going to have a hard time stopping them. So let's not get carried away on Michigan State saying they're a bad defensive team, but I just don't think they've been as good as what we're accustomed to seeing, whereas on the other end, Michigan's better on defense, but they don't have the scoring depth. Something I talked to you about earlier, I just think there's a lot of missing links scoring-wise, and when you get into Big Ten play and they start locking in on Charles Matthews a little more, who else is going to score? The freshman foreign kid, I can never pronounce his name, the lefty, I'm just going to call him the lefty because until I find out how to say his darn name, he's been outstanding. I mean, he can score, but who's going to be filling that void as far as, like, when Duncan Robinson comes off the bench, you got to watch him. You got to make sure that he's not left open. And then with the starters, Wagner and Rutland could give you 20-plus every night. And I think Michigan will still have some games where they're going to need to score and go. But when your defense is rock solid, you know, you win. I mean, obviously the old saying, defense wins championships, it's true. I mean, Michigan's got a good defense. And they're not going to get in a ton of foul trouble, I don't think, because if you lose Tusky, I think that they're okay playing small because that's what Michigan has done over the years. So I think that both teams are different this year. I think Michigan State scores better. Next year, Michigan State is going to be way better on defense. I mean, you bring in someone like Rocket Watts, I mean, you clearly know how high I am on him.
he can really defend full court. That's one thing that they haven't had with Winston that they're really going to love with Luck, because he can really, really pressure. So next year, look out, because they're getting a lot of talent and a lot of guys that can come in and play defense at a high, high level. And McVay, you're telling me, is a very good defender. They need another guard who can really control the game on defense. And I just, you know, Winston struggles. He really does on defense. I think if he's a bigger point guard, he's not a quick point guard. He uses a lot of things to his advantage on offense because of his size, whereas defense, he has a harder time keeping guys that are quicker in front of him. But I'm excited to see if Michigan State can go back to maybe the old defense but still score. And if they can do that, look out even this year. But it'll be fun. Like, I'm definitely going to tune in today and kind of see, you know, what they look like on defense against a lesser opponent. And obviously, we'll get to see a little more against UCLA because they're going to score at a high level. UCLA always, under Coach Alford, they're hard to stop. And that would be a big game to see if Michigan State can at least contain them in the 60-70s mark. So I'm looking forward to that one, obviously. But, you know, like, you said you wanted to talk some basketball, obviously, Tyler. I'm going to end on this because, you know, we've talked a lot about development of players. And obviously, Jaren Jackson Jr. had a huge game this past week. He had his career-high 27. Miles Bridges is doing a great job for the Hornets. But we're going to go to Draymond, your boy. And I just want to touch on this because, you know, obviously, before we can say that, with Michigan and Michigan State Pro, there's a lot of talent there. Caris LeVert going down with an injury sucks because he's really had a breakout year. So prayers to him because that's really frustrating. He was really coming along. But to go to NBA players from Michigan and Michigan State, Draymond Green, that suspension, I want to talk about that. I had a piece earlier about this. I'm really shocked. I mean, I'm surprised that
we've gotten to this point when Draymond, we know who he is. We know he's going to be animated. He's going to be vocal. He's a leader. He's the glue to that team. Are you kind of surprised and, like, shocked at the same time that this happened with his suspension?
I'm not surprised. I'm going to You know, he is one of those guys, but, I mean, at the same time, it's kind of weird because you don't typically like, I mean, I don't typically like these guys, but a lot of these guys who talk and act like he does, they're all offense first. They don't put it together defensively. Usually, I mean, you do have rare occurrences where you have Ron Artest, Meta World Peace, Panda Friend, whatever you freaking want to call him, and guys like Dennis Rodman kind of do the same thing. But most of the guys are more offense and less defense, and so usually that's why I don't like them. You know, I did like Rodman. I liked Artest until he went headhunting in Detroit. I think that, I do like that they focused on defense. I mean, obviously Draymond's more talented offensively than either of those guys. Doesn't score like Ron Artest could, but, you know, he is the facilitator for what's been the best franchise in the NBA for the last 5 years or so. So I don't normally like it, but when you hear about his upbringing, when you hear about what it was like for him to go to those gyms in Saginaw and, you know, be the littlest guy there and say he has next and, you know, older guys like throwing him in the trash can and taking his ball and kicking it and doing whatever else, like, you realize this is what made him so freaking special. And you realize what made him so good. And, you know, he is brash to an extent, but, you know, when you look at how he came up and everything that he's put up with, and let's face it, you know, being thrown in a trash can was probably one of the better things that could happen to you in Saginaw when you start acting like that. So I think that, you know, you realize this is why he's so good. He does hold a grudge with things. But he's also selfless enough to be like, hey, DeMarcus Cousins, come in and be the best post player on our team, even though it's me right now. You know, Durant, same thing. He was the guy. He was the guy recruiting Durant. He's a very selfless player still, but he, I mean, he does. His attitude is what makes him as talented as he is. That's how he got to where he is. It's how he became the Defensive Player of the Year. How he's an All-Star. How, you know, crazy enough, there are occasional talks. I don't know if he's there yet. You know, he probably needs to win Defensive Player of the Year a couple more times. Like, you know what, this kid could end up in the Hall of Fame too. And so,
yeah.
I mean, look, it's not all his offense, obviously. Yeah, you know, he has the rings, he has the defense. You know, he's not a liability like other guys who were defensive stoppers were, like Ben Wallace, who, you know, is going to end up in the Hall of Fame. So, it's how he got there. I don't like it, but you got to respect it, and that's something you got to do. You don't have to like him, but you know what? You got to respect him. You got to realize, you know, these Cavalier fans who hate him, you know, these Lakers fans who are going to hate him when he hurts LeBron's feelings the next time.
Like, again, yeah.
they would take him on, you know, they would take him on their team in a heartbeat. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, there's no question. I think that, you know, you always want to see Michigan State players do well, but I don't know if you want to see him do more than, for me, better than Draymond, because he's from the state. So, you know, I was not a fan of Draymond at first. You know that. I mean, I used to think that he wouldn't be as good on a different organization. I used to say those common themes that a lot of people just like to throw out there, even though they don't know how good the guy really is. And he just, he can do a little bit of everything. And I really, I hope this thing turns out to be just kind of a, you know, a flash in the pan where we're over it. We don't ever talk about it again. But and now, today's, you know, in today's society and in this new age of, we got to make everyone happy and we got to make sure we cater to people. I'm worried that Draymond, that this becomes something for the Warriors' sake. I don't think the Warriors, though, will ever let Draymond go. But this was a bad move, I think, for them to suspend him, because I think that really just says, you know what, KD's right, and even though you argued with him, and you know, we're going to suspend you, we're going to, you know, fine you, you're going to get paid for a game, and that's a big deal. I mean, that's a really big deal, and that frustrates me because I just think, you know, where are we going with this thing? You know, this is a guy who's won rings for you. He's a great defender. He covers multiple positions. He's a key part to that team. You know, I mentioned on Anchor earlier, Tyler, I think that Steph Curry is still the most important player on that team. I would argue that maybe KD's the best player, but I think Steph Curry is the most important player, and then I may even argue that with Draymond could be just as important as all of them. So they got to really know what they got there. And you know how this thing goes where teams get, you know, trades happen, they throw players away, and they try to make people happy all the time. You know what's really a happy moment is when you're celebrating championships every year. If you lose Draymond, you know, I think it's going to be harder. Now you lost the glue. You lost the guy who would do all the little things. Nowadays,
you lost
you don't
the guy who
that.
Brought in Cousins, who was ultimately a one-year rental. And I think that, you know, I don't think it's that terrible of a thing, you know. KD, he says, I mean, he has that perception or whatever where he's not stubborn, where he's not a fighter, where he's not a killer, which I think the killer on the court thing has kind of dissipated after he took LeBron to school over the last couple seasons. But people still view him as, what was it, a cupcake? And so people still kind of view him as that. He's not that. You know, you go back, you listen to a couple of the championship celebrations that they've had. You know, they talk about how they fight all the time. You know, Draymond and Durant fight all the time. But at the end of the day, you know, they're still going to be lighting up victory cigars, flying home on jet plane, gambling away their bonuses that they're going to end up getting because they won another championship. And, you know, that will be that. You know, role players like Steve Kerr. I mean, look, Steve Kerr got punched in the face by Michael Jordan. You know, Steve Kerr is running the Golden State Warriors right now. And so he understands this is just a no more than a flash in the pan. Steve Kerr wasn't traded. You know, he ends up hitting the game-winning shot, the finals-clinching shot. So it's one of those things. Steve Kerr knows what it's like. He's been in locker rooms like that. He understands it. And so I think he knows how important Draymond is to the team. I think this is nothing more than, you know, it is what it is. It's a situation where, you know, guys didn't get along. You do need to control it to some aspect, but at the same time, he understands what both these guys mean to the team. He understands what their personalities are like. He's been in those situations before. He knows that, you know, everybody's still important to the team. So if this happened on any other organization, the thing would fall apart other than maybe the Spurs with Popovich. Steve Kerr knows how to do it as well as anybody.
Yeah, it'll be okay. I mean, I just hope, you know, I've seen this before, you know, growing up a big Bulls fan, a huge Jordan fan. I mean, I still sometimes wonder how that thing got torn apart when they won their third in a row. And I'm going to tell you, in this day and age, even more so than then, guys have egos. There's a lot of egos that go into this thing. And Draymond has an ego, but it's not an ego of me. It's an ego of winning. And, you know, I'm going to challenge people, and I want us to get the mess out of each other. This isn't an ego where it's money or it's, you know, I want to be the star player. And I think sometimes what happens in this thing is people tend to think they're bigger than the team. And I had mentioned that yesterday or the day before. I had talked about how winning is the most important thing. I hope that always stays the same with KD. I think KD will find that the other side isn't that great. If you ever want to leave again, you're going to find a hard time winning. And there's not a lot of organizations, you know, period, in all sports that are as powerful as the Golden State Warriors. So I guess I get the suspension on that end. Hey, you're not bigger than the team. This is still the Warriors. You can't just yell at guys. So maybe that was a way of putting Draymond in check. But I'll tell you what, this thing should stick together. And KD mm-hmm. did make a good comment. Hey, I'm not looking to get traded. I'm not, you know, looking that direction. I want to be here. So I just hope that it doesn't get to a deal where they try to move Draymond. They try to make a deal for him. And that's what my worry is. Because I really want to see him be with the Warriors forever. I love it for him. I'm proud of him for that. I like his style. I played with guys like Draymond Green. You know, I played with a guy at Western Michigan by the name of Ben Reed. He was Draymond Green. You didn't, that guy yelled at you. He said things that weren't very friendly. But you know what? That guy helped us win, and he wanted to win. So, you know, being from this state, there's a lot of guys like Draymond Green. There's a lot of kids like him. So I just hope it continues to be successful for him. Obviously, if he's ever moved one day, he'll be fine. But at the same time, I want to see him continue to be winning for the Warriors. So
here's the thing. Here's the thing. If it's about money and if it's about being the star player, I think that those issues are less repairable than if it's about winning, and that's what this is about. That's what this is about. With those two players, with those two guys, you know what it's about. It's about winning. It's about, you know, someone not picking up their slack defensively. It's about whatever it is. You know, this is about winning. It's not about, like, hey, I want to be the best player on the team. No, because you've got to go through Klay Thompson, Steph Curry after that, too. So that's what this is about. And those issues are very fixable by winning. And that's what they do. That's what they've done. That's what they're going to keep doing as long as this group's together.
Well, that's my concern, though. My concern is it was more about give me the ball on KD at the end. And look, I kind of get it. Because that's why it started. You know, it started with a turnover by Draymond, but maybe he didn't make the right play. But Draymond's been making those plays forever where he comes down, he handles the ball, and he's a facilitator. So my concern is that even though KD wants to win, KD still wants to be the guy who is the big reason they win. Whereas it's very easy to argue that Steph Curry, if he played for the Warriors without KD, he might have more MVPs. You know, I really believe that. I mean,
yeah.
If anyone has watched,
well, you look
season,
at it, I think he should have won Finals MVP last year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and he's taken a back seat because of KD. So sometimes, you know, look, I question some things in the future for that program. And here's another thing. I know it sounds crazy, but it's true. Winning becomes boring. I know it sounds terrible. But nowadays, I think guys want to win, but they also want to be the main guy. Whereas Look at Kyrie Irving. You know, he could have stuck in Cleveland and gave another challenge, a higher challenge to the Warriors with LeBron. He didn't want to be LeBron's sidekick no more. He didn't want that. And, you know, KD, I don't think he wants to be the sidekick to the Warriors. He wants it to be very known. I'm the main reason that we're getting over the top. Whereas I kind of argue, well, they win before you. And I hate that, hate to say it that way, but it's true. And I think that they really struggle without Steph. I mean, when KD's went down to injury, they've been great. Well, when Steph went down, they struggle. They struggle not having that point guard. So that'll be interesting. And the NBA is so darn long, but obviously this is a fun time for me, and I know you as well. You know, we love basketball. Obviously, me, I'm getting a little more antsy because it's going to be strictly basketball soon. But obviously, we've got football in Michigan. Being in the game this weekend, a chance to go to college football playoff
is big, and we got to see what happens with Michigan State.
But I'm ready for full-fledged basketball. Let's get this thing rolling. Hey, Michigan, if you win and you win out, good luck. You get to play Alabama. I probably won't even tune in. Don't even want to see that destruction. So we'll talk more about football, obviously, in the next few weeks. But we will add more basketball because it's pretty much almost here where it's full-fledged basketball season.
Again, Ty, thanks again, man. We'll get back to preparations for this week's college football game, and we will not talk about the Lions. I'm sure we will, but I really don't want to.
That's my thoughts on the Lions, by the way.
we're not gonna destroy our happy Sunday. It probably will be destroyed soon. But again, Ty, thanks again, man. Great insight on everything as well. And basketball, man. Let's tune in tonight to the game. I know you'll be watching, and we'll have some thoughts on it this week. Again, that's Tyler Hayward on Rivalry Radio. We will get a lot of information out about our prediction for the Michigan-Ohio State game. Obviously, we'll talk more Michigan State football, and it'll be a lot of fun this week. Football's coming to a close. Basketball pretty much in full force here for us soon, and we'll be on all those topics this week. Thanks for tuning in. Again, this is Rivalry Radio, where every rivalry matters, but none more than one. We'll talk soon, and go blue and go green.